Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Thanks for listening to the Dealership Fix It podcast, a podcast designed to tap dealerships, you all, into high-performance ideas. Today, I'm honored to welcome back to the show my old friend Jeffrey P. McNulty. Jeffrey is a founder, CEO, retail turnaround expert, retail educator and trainer, leadership coach, innovator, online course creator, mentor, retail expert, and best-selling author of The Ultimate Retail Manual. Mr. McNulty is currently the founder and chief executive officer of New Retail Ethos, which assists retail organizations and businesses, regardless of size, scope, or niche, with alleviating and addressing common pain points. He's been labeled a hybrid in the business world, as he has over 30 years of experience as a retail executive for the Home Depot, Lowe's, Barnes & Noble, PetSmart, Shopko, Toys R Us, Publix Supermarkets, and Festival Foods, as well as over 17 years of tenure as a retail market research analyst. He's also the founder and CEO of the Ultimate Retail Course. Jeffrey, that is an intro that will get people's ears turned on, I think. Thank you for jumping on and taking the time.
Yeah, that's a heck of an intro you gave me there. I might have to send you something after that. That's fantastic. Well, first of all, I'm honored to be back on your show. I know that you were talking about coming back and doing the show, and I really I want to thank you for doing that, because I think a lot of your listeners got a lot of value out of your show. So I thoroughly enjoyed our previous show. I think it was back in August of 2019, and if my memory serves me correctly, it was episode 44. I believe. So thank you for the incredible opportunity to come back and engage with your awesome audience.
No, absolutely. I see a lot of direct line sort of correlations to what's going on in retail at the level at which you see it and are plugged into it. And then at the level that's, once removed, it's a different level of retail. But I definitely appreciate you bringing your retail experience and expertise to this audience.
Absolutely.
So, for those who didn't get to listen to that last one that you were on, would you share a little bit about who Jeffrey P. McNulty is and your experience in the retail sector?
Yeah, let's see, where should I start? I started in retail in 1982 in Sunrise, Florida. Sunrise, Florida is a suburb of Fort Lauderdale. And at Publix supermarkets as a part-time bag boy. Just took the job. I just needed something. I think I was 13, 14 years old, still in high school, and riding my 10-speed bike to the store every day. I was happy to have a job. I was making, I think it was $2.90 an hour, and I was happy. I was excited to have a job and doing something on my own for a change. So I spent the next 30 years as an executive leader. I think you listed all the 8 retailers that I worked for. And then in 2012, I finally decided to leave retail leadership after 30 years and start consulting on the retail sector full time. It's something I thoroughly enjoyed. I got a chance to have more of a global reach. And then in 2005, 7 years before this, I started planning my exit strategy to transition out of retail into retail consulting by joining Gearson Lehman Group as a retail analyst. I knew that retail leadership is very hard. You're on the floor a lot. You're working 12, 15-hour days. It's physical, it's mental, it's demanding. It has a shelf life. So I admire and respect anybody that's been in retail leadership as a servant leader for a long time. And I was mostly in big box retailers where the store is over 100,000 square feet. You're physically and mentally drained when you get home every night. So I started planning my exit strategy to kind of move away from that and then pull that knowledge with me to then help clients around the world. So I've conducted over 1,000 consultations / engagements with clients on Wall Street, hedge fund managers, equity investment partners, retailers from niche player to big box, business owners and entrepreneurs on the retail sector since 2005. In 2018, I finally published the Ultimate Retail Manual. strategies for retailers to thrive and succeed in the digital world. People were asking for, it took about 4 years for me to write the manual. A lot of people were reaching out to me. I had clients I was on the phone with. I had some mentors, some university professors, of course, friends and family. So I finally pulled the trigger and wrote the manual. It took about 17 months from inception until publication. One of the most creative endeavors that I've ever done. I encourage anybody to write at least one book in their lifetime. Obviously, you write something that you're passionate about. The way that KDP, Kindle Direct Publishing from Amazon, has it set up right now, it's much, much easier than when I published it 5 years ago, 4 years ago. So the manual has been updated 12 times. One great thing about KDP that I don't know if most authors realize is that it's a POD, which stands for print on demand. So what I like about that is back in the day when you published a manual or a book, it was in stone. There was nothing you could do to change it unless you did a revision or came out with another version of that book. With KDP, you can update it as many times as you want. So what I do is I update the manual about 3 to 4 times a year to stay current. So it's been updated about 12 times currently to stay current with 2022. And then as 23 rolls around, I'll update it multiple times as well there. So, and then at the behest of a lot of readers and clients and colleagues and friends, they were asking for, as you know, it never ends when you come out with something, there's the next level, the next innovative thing. They were asking for an online course. And I said to myself, you know, when the inspiration hits me, because it took me 4 years before to write the book. And I said, the next time inspiration hits me, I'm going to go ahead and jump on it and not wait so long. So in a span of 3 days, I had multiple people reaching out to me. There was a lady that helped me create the course. Her name is Chrissy Powers. She's in the United Kingdom. Ashling Twos, who we're both friends with on LinkedIn, she reached out to me. And multiple other people in this short amount of time said, hey, Jeff, you ever thought about doing an online course? And I never written a course before. A little intimidating, just like writing a book. It's very intimidating in the very beginning. But once you get going, you kind of feel that, you know, the creativity kind of takes over. And with my consistency and attention to detail, it really started moving along very well. So after 3 days, I said, you know what, let's do it. So it went from 4 years to 3 days. I think I moved the needle pretty good on the inspiration. And as you mentioned, I'm the founder and chief executive officer of New Retail Ethos. We assist retail organizations and businesses, regardless of size, scope, or niche, with alleviating and addressing common pain points. So that's kind of a little bit about my background. Anybody that's interested in learning more, please send me a connection request on LinkedIn. I'm at about 29,980 some connections. They only give you 30,000, unfortunately, but I kind of go through every couple of weeks and kind of, I have to remove some people, but you can have unlimited followers. But when you're connected with somebody on LinkedIn, you don't have to be a paid member to message them. So that's one of the advantages connecting with people. And I'm on LinkedIn, as you know, Brian, about 2 or 3 hours a day. So I think it's one of the best, if not the best, engagement platform for business professionals on the planet. So,
yeah, absolutely agree. So, you know, part of the reason I wanted to have you on here is you know, obviously we've been through a thing. We've been through what they call the COVID pandemic, right? I'd love to get and obviously in this, you know, share your perspective. What I was sort of imagining was, you know, where retail kind of got to in pre-pandemic times, where did it go to during the pandemic? Now that we're, I guess, considered post-pandemic, what's that look like? And where do you see it going next?
Well, that's a great question. That's a 4-part question. But we'll take it one step at a time. Yeah, you know, the retail sector was what I call heavily entrenched in the pendulum effect. The pendulum effect is when a sector or an environment is out of balance and the momentum has heavily swung to one side, which is we were over-retailed. You can't keep growing and growing and growing. At some point, the market becomes saturated and you're no longer putting stores in A and A-plus locations. You're down to C and D locations. So we were over-retailed. With the pendulum effect, energy spent has to be rebalanced in accordance with the universal laws. So if it's all the way to the left, it's then got to swing all the way to the right. And left and right does not mean political. It's just the side. So the during this time, there was a cacophony of store closures and bankruptcies which started piling up. This all started in 2017, before the pandemic. So it's pre-pandemic, obviously. And then I'm just going to go through some of the eye-popping numbers of store closures. In 2017, there was 14,404. The trend exploded in 2018. There was 19,371 store closures, 8,400 in 2019. And then finally in 2020, which was probably the worst, second worst, was 12,200 stores closed for a grand total of 54,375 total store closures from 2017. So as I reiterated during the August 19th, 2019 show, the United States had over 23 square feet of retail space per capita. Per capita means for every resident that we have here in the United States. We just had too many retail stores for the new retail environment, which included changing consumer preferences towards e-commerce and omni-channel options. Some retailers were lethargic about right-sizing their store footprint. They kind of knew they had to do that, but they kind of just sat back. But if you look at the world-class retail brands that are out there, they're always proactive and not reactive. And they have a strong sense of where the sector is heading. They can kind of see around the curve, per se. They don't have a crystal ball, but they can kind of see and bend around the corner and look where things are heading. And there's a saying in football that I like to use about this, about when a cornerback's covering a wide receiver, that is extremely poignant to this conversation. And if he's even, he's leaving. And the translation for that is if a retailer is waiting on other retailers or businesses to work out the growing pains by executing new innovative strategies, they're going to have a permanent seat at the back of the bus. It's been proven through empirical evidence that the retailers that are the very first on the scene with trying some new innovative strategy, yes, there's going to be, you know, monumental failures. But that experience really builds up and gives you resiliency moving forward. And then once you start hitting your stride, the confidence sets in and then you're really starting to roll. So there is merit and value in being the first to do something. Now, with certain things, you can kind of hang out a little bit and wait and let everybody else kind of make a few mistakes. But a lot of these retailers that were closing stores were just business as usual. Just continue opening stores and they're following an old blueprint that was outdated. So the frantic pace of the market has been changing. And during this time, the retail sector was saturated. And brands were starting to cannibalize their own stores. Now, cannibalization is not necessarily a bad thing. Like there at the Home Depot, there was a store in Chicago in North Avenue that was doing about $3 million a week. This insane amount of volume for a store. And they opened up a store about, I don't know how many miles away. It was a few miles away. And it actually alleviated some of the traffic, and was actually a good thing. But that's the exception to the rule. So accelerated growth can only continue for so long. It can't continue forever. And unfortunately, the myopic strategy is not a sustainable long-term plan. So many retailers that close stores, they possessed a gluttony of store footprints that could not react to the burgeoning trends of inclusive and convenient digital environment, e-commerce, omni-channel, and what I like to call experiential retail that consumers were demanding. So some people know what experiential retail means. Some don't. The ones that don't, it's a concept that has its roots firmly planted in coercing shoppers back into stores to facilitate increased store visits that will encourage customer loyalty, maximize top-line revenue, and establish your brand awareness within the ultra-competitive retail sector. So to sum it up, as a paraphrase, a lot of these stores, retailers should have closed these stores a long time ago before the pandemic hit. And then basically when the pandemic hit, it just everything got flooded forward and they had no choice at that point. So it's really sad to see because, you know, working in retail for 30 years, I'll always be an advocate for the retail sector. I post mostly positive posts on the retail sector. There's a lot of negativity going on, but there's a lot of positivity, and I love to shout that out. But the retail sector is very strong, and it's doing well. And we'll get into some of the other things about what's happening in retail as we move forward.
Yeah, and obviously, if somebody wanted to focus on, you know, negative, there's certainly no shortage of that. We could all just live in that zone, but you know, to what ends and to what benefits? So,
Exactly.
You know, exactly. And you and I have talked in the past, I think in conversations and probably in that previous episode, you know, my audience, the audience that's listening to this are largely in and around the dealership sector. They're in retail, but they do consider themselves unique in so many ways from, you know, typical or traditional retailer is how they would sort of view it. I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, they sell VIN products, you know, vehicle identification number units, you know, is one of their things, and it's complex so that, you know, be it automobiles, motorcycles, boats, bulldozers, you know, they have service departments, they do on-site repairs, that differentiates them from maybe traditional retail. They might have a body shop or even a rental business in that same location. So, you know, these are some areas that they might differ, but based on them being a brick and mortar that is doing retail business with the public, what are there a couple things that transcend the boundaries from your view that, you know, if they may not be doing it, but they need to be doing it as soon as possible?
Yeah. Let me just back up a little bit. I want to just cover more of the during the pandemic, the post pandemic, and then the future of retail. I want to make sure we kind of cover that because it kind of ties in. I just didn't want to have one long soliloquy going on here for like 30 minutes. You're like, Jeff, I'm still here. I'm over here. I'm just going to take a nap.
No.
You know?
They want to hear you more than they want to hear me. I don't do monologues, or I try not to. So I like, right? I like to give you the spotlight.
I hear you. I didn't want to sit there and But so we'll kind of break it down with during the pandemic. So I broke it up into four kind of quadrants. So during the pandemic, I feel it was a blessing in disguise. Now, not for any of the people that we lost and not for any of the issues that happened with the people getting sick and ill, but the overall sector, there was a lot of positives that came from it. So because it accelerated the timeline for retailers to invest in their fulfillment strategies, digital offerings, omnichannel, and customer-centric positions were your frontline employees, and I really love to see that they got the recognition that they deserved. Many retailers transform their stores into fulfillment hubs that create a better retail experience for the customer. So there was buy online pickup in the store, but not a lot of people had it. Buy online return in the store, again, was intermittent. Curbside pickup really picked up, and then same day delivery. So we must remember that as the pandemic has subsided, most people had pent up demand to visit the brick and mortar stores. You know, you always want what you can't have. And I tell you, you know, I personally love, I'm a hybrid. I'll do a little shopping online, and then I love to shop in the stores. But I prefer shopping in the stores to experience the engagement. So as social beings, we innately crave human engagement, experience, and interaction. We crave that as social beings. So the pandemic accoutrements that retailers invested in definitely improved the guest experience. So I was super excited to witness a lot of retailers, not all, but most, recognizing and rewarding their frontline workers. And they were handing out pandemic bonuses. I think Lowe's was up to 7 or 8. I lost count with them. They were way up there. Increased vacation time and schedule flexibility. I really like to see the flexibility of the schedule. And I wanted to give a shout out to the ones that really did it the best. Home Depot, we mentioned Lowe's, Target, Walmart, and Tractor Supply for their considered efforts to recognize and reward their employees. You know, working in retail as a frontline employee, it's a very arduous and laborious job. Depending on what kind of retailer you're in, again, you're on your feet for a long time. You're sweating, you're lifting stuff, you're loading vehicles, you're ringing a register, you're cleaning up, receiving, you're making bales. It's a hard job. It really is. And, you know, to me, that's one of the things I loved about working in retail leadership in the stores is that I could partner with these individuals. And like, if there was a cart run, I'd be the first one to make a page and I'd be the first one out there, you know, shagging the carts and getting them back in. If somebody's making a bale, I'd stop by and we chat for 2 or 3 minutes. Hey, what do you think about the Packers? How are they doing? You kind of bond with your employees when you jump in. Now, as an executive leader, you can't sit out on the lot for a half hour, 45 minutes because he's running the store and you got to be like a shark. You got to be kind of moving around and managed by wandering around, keeping the pulse of the store. But I was really happy to see the frontline employees being recognized and how valuable they are to every retailer. So I coined an axiom that kind of sums up this point. It's talent acquisition and talent retention are the new business currencies in 2022 and beyond. A lot of retailers are struggling to attract and retain. And you know, we could have a whole show on just the reasons why. But I like to see that the fact that when employees are working in retail, they're getting the recognition, they're getting the pay increases, they're getting increased time off. And again, not every retailer is there, but they're doing it. They're moving the needle per se. So now we'll go into post-pandemic, which is kind of where we are right now. And the retail sector is still going through what I would call a massive transformation. However, there is light at the end of the tunnel. And this year, I believe there's 4,432, I believe, new store openings to date as of I think it's early September. And then there's only 1,950 some closings, which is over a 2-to-1 ratio of store openings to store closings. So the one thing I like to make sure that we remember is that we're experiencing what I call a quadfecta of global challenges. We have a pandemic that's still lingering. We have supply chain issues, record inflation, which is affecting fuel, food, energy, disposable income, housing, and there's waning consumer confidence. Now, I say waning because it fluctuates up and down depending on the consumer price index. And we're going into the heaviest quarter of the year for economic growth for a lot of these retailers. So many retailers are reducing their forecast for the rest of 2022 because of the uncertainty. So this is to be expected, though. I think this is a thing that I wish Wall Street would understand, is that when you have inflation coming at 8.3% rise in the consumer price index in August, it's going to be a challenge for pretty much anybody doing any kind of commerce with business. It's tough. I mean, that's pretty high. So there's going to be pecuniary headwinds as prices continue to soar across a broad array of goods and services. And this is why, if you notice, retail juggernauts like Target and Walmart recently reported profitability concerns throughout the remainder of 2022. And Wall Street is very unforgiving with the retail sector, where you could have a retailer go 30 quarters in a row and they miss one quarter and they try to pound them. And it's like, I just think it's unfair because, you know, there's always going to be ebbs and flows. And this is something that the retailers aren't doing themselves. They're being affected by this, you know, and that's one thing that I think that it'd be nice if people understood that in the back of their mind, that this is an external a global issue that's affecting all these retailers. Mm-hmm. And these inflationary metrics, Brian, are what's called kitchen table issues. It's forcing consumers to refocus their lower than normal discretionary income on core staples. So you have to think about, well, can I go to the movies? Can I go out to eat? You know, I got to make sure I'm getting gas for my car. Now, I know the gas prices are coming down, but they're still well above, you know, what it was back in 2020. So the Federal Reserve has agreed to keep raising interest rates to tame inflation. You know, I'm hoping that after this next raise, that'll be enough, but who knows? And that when they raise the interest rates, the strategy will definitely slow borrowing. It's going to lower consumer demand, and it's going to ratchet down hiring and wage growth. So which means that some of the growth that we just increased during the pandemic might now wane a little bit. And then the hiring is, a lot of companies are putting on, you know, freezes on the hiring because of this. So again, it's not something that the companies are doing. It's an external, these external indicators are affecting every retailer across the board. So, inflation, they say, is going to retreat in the first or second quarter of 2023. Again, I don't know if anybody has a crystal ball. I don't. Is it trending that way? It's kind of hard to say. It fluctuates month to month. So. But the good news is there are retailers that invested in their infrastructure, their supply chain, digital capabilities, analytics, e-commerce, and their people will start to reap the rewards for their considered efforts. So that's going to be nice to see when that finally starts coming around. So, and then finally, the future of retail. Again, I don't have a crystal ball. This is just what I see in talking to a lot of retail executives around the world, getting their unbiased, which is kind of hard because we're all biased, but you try to get as much unbiased information and what's going on, you know, boots on the ground per se. So I'm extremely optimistic about the future of the retail sector because I look at it as a long-term investment. If you're purchasing stock in the retail sector, or if you're looking to work in the retail sector, Retailers like Home Depot, Lowe's, Target, Walmart, Best Buy, Costco, Kroger, Kohl's and Wegmans, HEB, and probably Tractor Supply are many of the top retailers that are adapting and acclimating to what I call the new retail ethos. That's why I named my company New Retail Ethos. It's an ethos. It's a new energy that's happening in retail. And it's long overdue. So retail is coming around full circle, as everything does. Customers are yearning for a fully experiential, multi-sensory, what I would call experience, that harkens back to a bygone era of what I label the four E's. And the four E's are engagement, experience, entertainment, and execution. So some of the issues arise, Brian, when some of the retail leaders are enamored with the latest technological advancements, with losing sight of what's created a massively inclusive and engaging retail sector. So if you really look back at retail during the embryonic stages of retail back in the late 1800s, the iconic retailers like Brooks Brothers and it was like Lord & Taylor, Macy's, they created an experiential environment that immersed each customer in a visceral environment that catered to all five senses. And I believe that in life, as in retail, everything is cyclical. Everything comes back around, and it's nice to see. So you know if you're on one side of the curve, it's going to be coming back around soon. But there's not a single client that my company, New Retail Ethos, consults with that has mastered all 10 pillars in my book and online courses, not a single one. There's some that do very well, but there's not a single one that hits all 10 the way they should. And I share those obviously in my book and my online courses, but it's time to revisit the fundamental building blocks of retail to ensure we are creating a strong foundation, core fundamentals like customer service, merchandising, selling, safety, talent acquisition, talent retention, organizational culture, and engagement. And you must be on point before focusing on the next silver bullet technology. I mean, you know, when you walk into a store, you know, you want a couple basics. You want to be able to find the products on the shelf. Again, that's where the supply chain comes in. So we just swung the pendulum from out of stocks to now being overstocked. But then now the retailers are starting to cut back on future orders. So we're going to dip back into the empty shelves again. And how do you know if your customers, employees, leaders, and vendors feel the same way you do about your brand, your service, and your culture? Well, you ask questions. You know, what I would do when I was working in retail is I would stand outside as a district manager or store manager, depending on the position. And I would have some gift cards in my hand, $5, $10 gift cards. And I would pick 10 to 15 different demographics of customers. Maybe it'd be a young couple, an older couple, a family, stuff like that. And I would ask them, how was your experience today in the store? And if I got a perfect answer, I'm like, no, absolutely not. There's got to be something we could have did better. And sure enough, 9 times out of 10, well, you know, I did have to wait at the paint counter an extra 10 minutes today. Okay, go back and look at the graphs, look at the staffing, what happened. And when you're fanatical about that, you really find what's going on and then you can fix it. You seek out negative feedback. I don't remember walking into a store where people were excited to hear negative feedback. It's only negative because it hasn't been addressed. And I wanted to hear it. Give it to me. Now, again, you know, I don't want people swearing at me and cursing me. I got red hair and I've been called a few superlatives in my day. As you know, redheaded stepchild and all these other things. And I'm like, well, you don't got a crack on the hair. First of all, I'm a ginger and God loves the gingers, you know? So that's what I thought anyway. That's what I thought. And, you know, I want to know what's wrong. So every upset customer, I wanted to personally deal with as much as I could. Now, you have to allow your assistant managers, your department managers, they have to have some experience as well. You can't just do it all for them. You'll enable them and they won't be ready to handle it when it's their turn. So, but any time there was an issue, I wanted to be involved as much as possible because I want to know. And then what happens is you put a plan together, you have a meeting with all your managers, or it's at an all-store meeting with all the employees. And some of the stores I ran, it was 300-400 employees. It looked like a football game. You know, you can't see the back with all the people back there. And, we'd bring up these issues and say, hey, let's start brainstorming. What are some suggestions? What are some ideas? And, you know, you drill down until you find what we can do to get better. But the key actuator is to actively listen. There's the key. Actively listen and respond to feedback expeditiously. So that's not happening in very many retailers. You can tell by going on to the chat forums and you look at the upset customers and you read the reviews and you know, our good friend Harry Flares talks about this a lot with you know, how good are you really are. Check out your reviews and look at the negative ones. Look at those. Me personally, I want to know the negatives. The positives, that's a great, want to keep doing them, but the negatives are dragging down your reputation and your brand recognition throughout the sector. So I believe that everything is going to crystallize. The digital era is a progenitor of the customer's desire to revert to a time when the retail sector was exploding with experiential touch points. We kind of you know, missed the boat a little bit with technology, where if you're speaking to your grandfather or your father, grandmother and mother, when they worked in retail, it was much different than it is now. It was much more personable. It was much more engaging. They knew your names. Now, granted, you know, they had smaller stores, and it was usually in small neighborhoods, so you had that family environment. But you can still do that when you're working in a big box if you're in a relatively smaller neighborhood. But you can get to know your customers and know what their likes and dislikes are. So that's kind of my speech on the whole pandemic thing. So now that we got that, we can take a break for a second.
Well, you know, you touched on several things that, and like you'd said, we could make whole additional podcast episodes or shows sort of discussing those things out. But getting back to the basics, you know, is something not instead of the what's newest and shiniest. That's an area where, to me, that stands out huge, because we all go through that in a lot of ways, whether it's, you know, in our own lives or in our own work. And it's sometimes hard to know what is the new shiny thing or what's the necessary thing. So,
correct.
Yeah. Correct. And then additionally, you had mentioned, and it's one of the things that's covered in your book that I love, is the idea of having, you know, you have a store meeting and you let it be an open forum. You let people say what they think is wrong, you know, obviously the expectation being, you know, bring some solutions. Don't just complain. Don't just come on here to come into the meeting to let's not wallow.
Correct. To complain. And yeah, that I believe that if you're a true servant leader, you create an environment. I would create an environment that was inclusive, but respectful. Uh-huh. You know, what I'd like to do is if you have a problem, come up with two solutions you think would work. Now, granted, you're not going to be able to listen to every solution with 300 people. It's not going to happen. You're never going to please everybody, no matter how hard you try. But I'll tell you something, you know, the employees, the frontline employees that work shoulder to shoulder with the guests, they really know what's going on. They're boots on the ground, per se, and they really understand something. No matter how much I'm on the floor, I can't be everywhere at the same time. You know, but these employees, they really understand the pulse of what's going on with the customers. And then when you bring them on board, and I was working at a store in Minneapolis in Home Depot, and there was a district store manager I had, his name was Dave Lafredo, and he always had people riled up to do these things, to do these projects. And I'm like, what's your secret? You know, you got everybody fired up. They're ready to run through walls for you. The hair's on fire. I'm going around with a fire extinguisher. What's going on? What are you doing? And he's like, well, what happens is when I'm talking to people, I find out what they like to do, what they love to do. And then when they bring up ideas that I think are worthy and that we can work within the confines of the organization, you know, the structure, I let them champion it, and they become the, you know, the face of that project, you know, that strategy, whatever they're going to do. Now, granted, you know, there's things you bring up, you know, to preface. You know, you have to look at the resources that are needed, the time frame, you know, is it going to affect customer service, the safety issue? So there's a long litany of things you have to go over, but the people then have buy-in at that point. And that's why, if you notice, a lot of my posts on LinkedIn are about tapping into intrinsic motivation. And that's a very powerful thing when you do that. But you got to get people involved. And the first thing is that the one actuator you have to be good at is you have to like people. If you don't like people, just for the love of God, don't be in leadership. Just don't be in leadership. You know, like me, I'm not good at being a mechanic. So I'm never going to be a mechanic. It's just not going to happen. I'm just not good at it, you know? So why do that when you're leading people? You know, I see a lot of leaders that are really well, they care about people. And then there's other leaders that do it for the wrong reasons, the power, the money, the ego, and stuff like that. So just remember, you're affecting a lot of people with your leadership.
Well, and it takes energy, you know, like you had referenced you're out, you know, bringing carts to the cart corral or whatever and talking to customers, you know, well, how was your experience? You know, what could we have done better? And they're like, no, everything's good. Everything. Thank you. Everything's wonderful. No. There had to have been something, like, you know, not sort of not taking that initial polite answer, right? That takes energy and it takes actual desire. And it sounds like from what you're talking about, that's an inside the organization and an external thing that needs to occur. And then, you know, be ready to take those without, you know, I don't know, without feeling like it's a slight, you know, take those for what they are and know that that's your opportunity. And I think most people in business would understand and do attempt to do that, do hope to do that. But I don't know. I think a lot of times that sort of that next level that you're mentioning, the energy and the desire to go beyond the nice, polite answer.
Yeah, I had quite a few customers look at me with a very weird look, like, I'm giving you positive feedback. I loved my visit. You're grilling me, right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, but I got a gift card here for you, you know, that type of thing. But I've yet to see somebody do that. And I'm thinking it's the most raw information you're going to get. It's like, it's costing me $10, $5, $10, you know, out of petty cash, not going to my pocket, but out of petty cash. Right. Mm-hmm. And it, you're getting firsthand real experience live that just happened. I found more information in that half hour that I was outside, you know, talking to the different, you know, types of customers and stuff. And it was the most rewarding and humiliating sometimes experience, because I'm the store manager or the district manager, and but I like knowing that it's my responsibility. I got to get better. Okay. And customers would come back to the store that I spoke to, and they would see me and they say, you know what, Jeff, I've never had anybody do what you did. So of course you feel good. Don't get me wrong. You feel good. It makes you feel good that you know, people are responding and they're happy that they're being asked, you know, what the issues are, because I've never left the store and had somebody ask me how my experience was and wanted negative feedback. They wanted it. I have never had it happen yet. And I think it's a very powerful tool. It doesn't cost much. It really doesn't, but you're getting almost a free focus group with live customers that you can really make a difference with. So, mm-hmm.
And at the time at which it's most fresh and most likely to be real versus the way our brain connects different dots in time together and creates a story, right? It's live and in person. I think you're gonna get the most real information at that point.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, you know, we had, and you had referenced just a minute ago, and it's one of the things I was going to ask you about, you know, being over retail. We talked about that before, and one of your and my favorite words, homeostasis, sort of, where's that? Where are we at and where are we working to in terms of, you know, you've referenced 23 square foot per person in the U.S. Is that where we were, or is that where we are now?
Yeah, let me back up and answer that one question you had first. I want to make sure I get all your listeners get the valuable information for coming onto your show. You were asking, I think you were asking a couple things that could transcend the boundaries that they may not be doing and what they could be doing.
Yeah. So,
the retail dealerships, I think you were saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Just sort of, I'm looking for some nuggets, because like I say, in talking to you, you're definitely, your expertise is in retail. I think some of these guys would be of the opinion that maybe, well, we're special, we're unique, we're so far different from regular retail. And in some ways they are, but what sort of things would transcend if they're not doing this thing or these things, they need to be doing them as soon as possible if they want to stay in business at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When New Retail Ethos consults with clients around the world, we cover what my CAPE strategy. I posted it on LinkedIn before. Anybody that wants to do a little bit more and look into a little bit more, then come to my profile and scan through. I post it once or twice every few months. It's a structured blueprint for achieving continued retail / business success. And CAPE stands for customize, adapt, personalize, engage, and differentiate. And I'll break down kind of each buzzword real quick and give a little bit of overview. Customize can be on-demand manufacturing, 3D printing, creating bespoke products and services, which is a burgeoning trend that I think is going to take off in the near future. Ask your customers what they're looking for. Again, getting back, there's a common theme you're noticing. Talk to the customers. Ask them what they're looking for. And then ask your employees what the customers are inquiring about. I'm sure if they go into a dealership, power sports dealership, they're going to be asking for things that aren't carried. And some of the stuff can't be carried. Again, you can't compete. You can't please everybody. But if you notice a common theme starting to happen, then you know that you can hop on that and get ahead of the curve. Adapt. Acclimate to changing consumer preferences through, it can be innovation, strategy, engagement, and execution. Can your retail business adapt to changing consumer preferences? Are you waiting for other retailers to work out the kinks? And can you pivot? So the key is, are you being proactive or reactive? A lot of these bullet points can come down. One thing I'm really good at from talking to clients is I'm able to take complex situations and simplify them. And I don't simplify them to devalue the complexity of the issue or the concern, but it usually comes down to a couple key things. And, you know, are you proactive or reactive? That's the first thing I would ask any power sports dealership. Which is it? Because nobody's both. Very rarely they're one or the other. If you're proactive, you can be reactive, but generally if you're proactive, you're focused on that. But if you're reactive, it's very hard to be proactive. Very hard, because it's like you're either playing on offense or defense in sports. And proactive means that you're talking to the customers, you're talking to the employees, you're asking them. Now, people are going to say, well, Jeff, that's not really a silver bullet. We do that all the time. Well, you can't be doing it all the time because it's not working. And I know it works because I've done it throughout my entire career, and the clients that I'm consulting with do it. I know other retailers and clients that do it. So, you know, it's one of those things where, are you really drinking your own Kool-Aid per se? And that's what happens a lot of time, is ego gets involved, Brian, and there's silos that are created. And I've worked at certain retailers, some of them are out of business now, and there's no information being filtered up. Even though you're at the store level, running the $20, $30, $40 million business, the information is coming down only. It's a one-way road, and it's coming down. Well, how can you ever succeed with that when you're not hearing what's going on from the people that are working in the stores? So personalize. Create localized products and services and assortments to match your geographical locations, and targeted communication. Are you creating an engaging and interactive experience for your guests? You know, there was a home improvement retailer that was shipping tractors to inner city Chicago. And I've never been to inner city Chicago, but the people that live there said, Jeff, we can barely let our dogs walk outside and pee on the grass because there's no room. We don't have any grass. What are you getting tractors for? You know what I'm saying? You should have one of those little push mowers, you know, that spin around, you know, with the blades on them and everything, mm-hmm. that are manual. Mm-hmm. And so there's things like that. Are you personalizing your assortments to your geographical locations? Like, you know, I live outside of Green Bay, Wisconsin, so obviously here a lot of Packer stuff, but Viking stuff's not going to sell here. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it might a little bit, but, you know, it's a Packer nation. So engage. This is the one that I probably spend the most time on. And again, we could have a whole show just on this exact bullet point right here. Listen and react to. Now, here's the key here. Customers, employees, people listen to. Generally, that's understood. But leaders and vendors, there's all four segments. You got to listen to all four. And in most retailers I work for, it's take care of the customer, take care of the customer, take care of the customer. I'm like, hold on a second here. We have employees, we have leaders, and we have vendors. What? Everybody's important. All four segments are equally important. And I'd have managers that would get upset at me, and I think it probably held me back from getting promoted a lot of times, because I'm like, the employees are just as important as the customers. No, they're not. They don't pay your salary. Yeah, but if there's no employees, who's taking care of the customers? Uh-huh. And then the leaders, the poor leaders. God bless the leaders. They think because they give you an extra 10 or 15 grand a year and a few stock options that all of a sudden you don't need to be listened to anymore, and you don't need to be valued. And being a leader in retail is a very hard job. I respect anybody. And again, I did it for 30 years in 5 states with 8 different retailers. So I got a really good compass on the different types of leadership in different retailers. Again, I'm not an expert on everything, but the point is the leaders everywhere. I've never heard a leader go, oh my God, I can't wait to work 70 hours a week and not see my family. I just love it. You know, and they're not making millions of dollars a year, you know, like some of these athletes and some of these entertainers and stuff. So it's a very hard job. So are you listening to your customers, employees, leaders, and then vendors? Vendors get left out of the mix. You know, whenever we had any kind of cookouts or anything, I would invite the vendors that were in the, you know, the radius that could come. And they're like, wow, you're one of the few people that ever invited us. You know, they're part of the ecosystem as well. Mm-hmm. So are you truly listening to them? So that would be one takeaway. Many retailers, unfortunately, Brian, they give this topic lip service. Yeah, we listen to people. Well, you know, Engagement is a living and breathing energy that must be a priority at all times. So, and again, not just during specific times. It has to be done every day. And there's various feedback channels that people can go. So one of our consult with clients, depending on if it's retail or a business, we go over some of the major feedback channels and sites. So I'll go through a list of them right here, right now, and then people can play that back and write them down. But it's Glassdoor, it's Yelp, it's SiteJabber, Consumer Affairs, Trustpilot, and then there's company external and internal forums, and social media, et cetera. So go on there. Every client I consult with, we go on all those channels, and it's a very humbling experience when you think you're great at something, and yet you know you're seeing all these 1, 2, and 3 stars all over the place. So I ask my retail and business clients this one question consistently: are you willing to accept the challenge of devoting your precious energy and resources to becoming the pioneer or the trailblazer in customer, employee, leader, and vendor engagement? Are you, because it's an effort. You got to focus on it. Engagement just does not happen on its own. And then finally, you have differentiate. You can do this through creating proprietary brands, which we spoke about as one of the heavy hitters back in our August 19th interview. I believe we spoke about that heavily. How are you building exclusivity? Are you providing exemplary service? Again, everybody provides exemplary service, but it just for some reason, the customers don't see it that way. I've never heard of a business going, yeah, we suck at customer service, you know? And it's something that I think people really need to take a look at. Are you implementing employee-focused behaviors? This is another one that the pandemic brought up that I really was excited about seeing. And then finally, what separates you from your competition? So whenever we consult with clients, I ask them, what separates you from your competition? And if they're struggling to come up with an answer, it's going to be a long engagement, because you know that's something you should know right off the bat. And you can't be good at everything. Nobody's good at everything, but you got to have a top five. So, and then lastly, to finish up on this topic is the top tier brands. They're really good at tapping into employee and leader. We've already talked about it, intrinsic motivation. And I like to focus on what's called my GAP strategy, and it stands for growth, autonomy, and purpose. And we'll briefly go through some of what you can do for each one, because there is time limit concerns with the call. Growth, how are you doing with your succession planning? Are you doing daily check-ins with your employees and leaders? Are you providing challenging work? And are you competitive with your wages and benefits? These are just, again, a couple, just 4 bullet points for each one, just to get you started. Autonomy. Are you flexible with your scheduling options? That's something, again, we saw through the pandemic that I really was excited about. Empowerment. Do you empower your employees? Trust and respect. You know, I just made a post yesterday about leading with heart energy. Mm-hmm. When you're leading with heart energy, you're never going to be disrespectful, and you're always going to be trusting until somebody proves they can't be trustworthy. And then the big one is, you have inclusion and support. Not everybody fits in the same, you know, a round peg doesn't fit in a square hole. Everybody has unique abilities and aptitudes, and you can tap into that by tapping into their intrinsic motivation and getting to know them. And finally, purpose. Are you fostering entrepreneurship? Entrepreneurship is just like entrepreneurship, except you're doing it within the confines of the company. Are you tapping into intrinsic motivation? We spoke about that. Community involvement. I know a lot of people that in the stores I worked in the districts, they were passionate about community involvement. And to me, I'm like, that's outstanding. I love it. You know, we're a part of these communities. Let's get involved. Let's help do things. And let's get involved as much as we can. Again, you have to have coverage in the stores and stuff, but you can always work out the community involvement. And then, of course, volunteering. A lot of people like to volunteer. A lot of people, elderly people that came to work in the stores I was in, they came there because they wanted to help volunteer in the community, and it kind of set up a structure where they could get out to the different areas and volunteer. And it was really nice to see. So, all right, that's my wrap up there of that question for you, Brian.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it. And you're in the depth that you go to in these is just, I don't know, to me, it's amazing. Obviously you and I are linked up on LinkedIn, and these are topics that you've covered, and they're just, they resonate. You've got so much content and so much information within them, but they definitely resonate with me and anybody that's paying attention, that's working within retail, well, and in this case, dealership. Yeah, absolutely. The question I was asking you was sort of where we at in, that metric. I don't know that metric, where it comes from, but you had referenced it in the past. And then today you referenced and you said 23 square foot per person in the U.S. Is that where we're at, or is that where we were?
Yeah, I don't have access to that information currently. That's something that I think that I don't know if they come out with that every few years or so. But yeah, let's talk about your homeostasis one. I know that's your favorite word. It's one of my favorite words. I love that word.
Absolutely. Yep.
I think you were saying we were over retailed. How's the homeostasis? I think finding us is what you were saying. Mm-hmm. So the retail sector is much more streamlined now, with more retailers having already invested it, again, in their infrastructure. Fulfillment was something that was really heavily invested in, supply chain, digital analytics, AI, e-commerce. And something that's becoming a problem now is talent acquisition and talent retention, employee growth, and then collaborative partnerships. So talent acquisition and talent retention is starting to, they're buzzwords, there's quiet quitting, there's quiet firing, there's the great reshuffle, the great, the great resignation. These are all coming from because the employees are starting to get fed up with not being treated fairly. Now, there's some people that in this world that they're going to expect more than they deserve. That's just how it is. There's always, again, we live in a world of duality. There's high, low, hot, cold. You're always going to have the exact opposite of something, no matter how hard you try. It's just how it is. So, but I like the employees that are speaking up. And a lot of times they're just asking for a little bit more to be included in things. So there's still a few ancillary retailers that will have to close more stores. You and I read some of the similar articles, and there's some that just aren't. A lot of them are underperforming. They're unprofitable. So, but the key is that we must remember that our society is facing a once in a generation quadfecta of global challenges. Again, to reiterate, it's the lingering pandemic, the record inflation, the persistent supply chain issues, and then waning consumer confidence. That's disrupted the trajectory of homeostasis. Like, we were heading towards that, and then this hit, and I don't know how that energy can stay focused on the same path when you have four different economic external indicators hitting at the same time. That's a tough uphill climb. So, but the good news is that inflation will come down. The pandemic effects are slowly fading. The supply chain delays will start to level off. As more retailers invest, and I like to see that they're doing this, they're investing in their own shipping containers and their commerce infrastructure. And of course, consumer confidence will rebound. So there is good news, but right now it looks like doom and gloom, and the inflation looks like it's going to be here forever. But nothing lasts forever when it comes to, commerce and business. It's always changing and evolving. And the good news from all this, and again, I like to focus on the positive because the negative gets plenty of coverage, is that the lessons that are learned during these hard times will help build resiliency. It really will. If you think about it, I like to lift weights, and when every time you lift weights and you go to failure, right, it's hard. But the next time, if you do the same exact thing, you'll be a little bit stronger. Mm-hmm. The body's like, hey, I got this now. Yeah. 400 pounds. Yeah. Come on. What else you got? That type of thing. And so there's resiliency that's being built within these retailers. And I think that long term, we're going to be much more insulated from a lot of these external issues. A lot of the manufacturing starting to come back now and be more domestic. Again, good things are starting to happen, but it's kind of hard to see the positive when you're right in the middle of the tornado. It takes a very, very strong and confident, positive person to see through the tornado, around the corner, and see what you're doing, because a lot of the stuff that's happening right now is not tangible. They're intangible things that are happening that are setting up the infrastructure and for success in the future. And that's what I like to see right now. That's what I'm looking at. I don't look at what's happening currently. I look at what's happening currently that the retailers are doing to move forward from this. It's like once shame on you, twice shame on me, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I see a lot of retailers that are learning. And the one thing that I like the most is that the employees, the frontline employees, are being recognized and rewarded. That's your bread and butter. You got to take care of these individuals. It's a very hard job. And I challenge any executive to go work in the stores. Go work in a Florida store in Outside Garden in July, August, and September, and tell me how you feel. You'll lose about 5 pounds and you'll probably pass out. It's very difficult to do in the home improvement stores and these big box stores. It's a lot. So I'm glad to see that they're doing that. But that there is some good news there if you really look for it.
Well, you know, I think what spurned me to ask you if you'd be willing to come back on for another episode was that article that I sent you. And it was, I saw it on LinkedIn. It was, I forget where else I could include the link in the show notes, but it was
tied. I think it was a chain store, I believe.
Yeah. And it was, of course, it was maybe a bit clickbaity. You know, it's got, like you say, it's got the picture of a Lowe's store right on the top. It's chain stores closing locations in 2022. And I looked at it. And of course, I think I'm a sharp enough guy in that, you know, you don't believe everything you read. You know, there's more depth to it than what's put into the article. And I was looking at it. And that's why I sent it to you and was like,
yeah, there's some discernment needed, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah. And I knew that obviously what's the reality based in it. And then, you know, you had talked about store openings and store closings a little while ago and that definitely.
Yeah, I'll touch base on that for you. That's not a problem. I love our conversations because your audience, I want to make sure they get good value and they keep coming back to your show because I really love your show. Many of the retailers on that list, I looked at it. There's quite a few on there. You know, unfortunately, and again, I don't like to speak negatively, but unfortunately, sometimes it's just, you got to call them how you see it. They're committed to an outdated strategy that just did not adapt and evolve to the new retail ethos. And we're in a digital age. That's why I named my book, Strategies for Retailers, the subheading, Strategies for Retailers to Thrive and Succeed in the Digital World. We're in a different age right now and a different environment right now. And there are some retailers that just, a lot of them on that list, unfortunately, waited to reduce their store footprint, kind of hoping that they didn't have to close any stores and disrupt their employees' lives. You know, the ostrich sticking their head in the sand kind of strategy. Mm-hmm. And it never works. Again, these retailers, if you notice, are 100% full-blown reactive. Because if they were proactive, a lot of them wouldn't be in the situation. And again, it's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. But again, because of the sky-high inflation, which is impacting pretty much all consumer sectors, the lengthy supply chain delays, the higher costs are being passed on to consumers. So every retailer is now starting to be a little bit reactive to this because nobody knows how long this is going to last. They say first and second quarter, it's going to start easing of 2023. But, if somebody has a crystal ball, let me know where it is. I haven't seen it. So in most cases, the retailers are closing underperforming and unprofitable stores that they should have did a while ago. But I think a lot of the retailers too, and it's kind of, I have empathy and compassion for the retailers because you can't have a bad quarter. You know, you don't get a mulligan. You don't, unfortunately. You're supposed to just keep hitting your numbers forever and never, ever, ever miss. It's just unfortunate. But you had the technology sectors and companies like Amazon, they went like a decade before they recorded a profit. Now, again, they were given a pass because they were reinvesting. Well, retailers are doing the same thing. Can you imagine a Home Depot going 40 quarters and not making any money and the stock being high and increasing like 1,000-2,000%? It's an unfair thing for the retailers that they're going through, and I really have empathy for them. So, but many of the retailers are restructuring and rebranding in an effort to stay ahead of the competition. And so by doing that, they're reducing some overhead and they have to maximize their ROI. So again, the rebranding and the restructuring, again, is one of those silver linings. It's a good thing. You know, I don't like when companies go out of business. Most of these companies are just reducing their footprint, which is bloated to begin with. But let me give you a list of some of the plethora of retailers that are opening new stores in 2023. We kind of named the numbers, but Costco is opening 28. Now some of these numbers could fluctuate, you know, here or there just because they decided not to open a certain store in a certain location or delayed it to 2023 for EBIT and analysis and stuff like that. So Target's opening 30, Ulta Beauty 50, Burlington 120, Five Below, I think it was 170 to 180, I believe. Dollar General is like over 1,000, and also 1,000 of their pop shelf concept stores, but that's by the end of 2025. TJ Maxx is 170, Fabletics is 24, Ross was 100, Big Lots was 50, Dollar Tree and Family Dollar 400, Aldi 100. Tractor Supply is really happy to see this, 80. At Home, 15. And then Starbucks will be adding, I just read about this recently, 200 new stores by 2025. So a lot of the people focus, a lot of the retail analysts, they focus on just the negative, the store closings, the issues, the problems. Well, remember, we live in a world of duality, so flip that coin over. What are the positives now?
Yeah.
There's always positives. There's always positives.
It's funny on that one particular one, obviously, you know, who doesn't know who Starbucks is, right? But that's one of the ones that was in the article, and they talked about how many locations were closing. And to me, it's like, what's more to that? And obviously, as you're mentioning, it's a net very positive. It's a location shuffle, like you know, in some occasions it's an underperforming location and that one goes away, but they've still got, you know, plans for growth. So that's just an interesting sort of spin on keeping the reality versus going to the negative.
Yeah, sometimes you got to pull the trigger. Sometimes you just got to, take the hit and just say, you know what, these stores are, and a lot of these companies, they provide options to transition within the company and other roles. They provide, you know, resume services. They do a lot of things to try to help. But sometimes you just, it's unfortunate. You know, nobody likes to lose their job. You know, in my book, I discussed the first time I had to terminate somebody. I was an assistant manager with the store manager in the room in 1998 at Home Depot in Minnesota. And I was almost physically sick. I almost had to go to the bathroom. I literally was, the gentleman had three kids. And I'm like, he's got three kids, you know, and I'm like, and my store manager, God bless him, he says, Jeff, you're going to be a store manager soon. And, you got to learn how to do this. It's part of the job. It's uncomfortable. And the gentleman was crying and I'm like, it was one of the worst days of my life besides putting down my animals and some, it was bad. And it's so I can understand these retailers are trying to hold on as long as they can. But you know, sometimes you just, it's the harsh side of being in retail sometimes, and you have to make these decisions. So I feel for some of these executives now, it doesn't hit them as hard sometimes, but it's hard. And a store manager or an HR has to terminate somebody, and they've been there for, you know, 10 years or whatever, you know, and they've been loyal. And I think the thing that always got me, Brian, was you do 9 million things well for the company and you do one or two things wrong. Again, I'm not talking about egregious, you know, actions.
Right.
And all those 9 million good things you did just go right out the window. You know, the loyalty's gone. That person just spent a decade helping build the brand, build the culture, increase revenue, build relationships. And it's like, you know, or granted, you know, not everybody is meant for every company forever. We understand that. But I just, it's like the 2 week notices, you know, you and I spoke about that before, you know, I put this in the book for a reason. You know, I remember employees at companies that I worked with, they put in a 2 week notice and they could have started immediately, but they wanted to do the right thing and put in their notice and be respectful and considerate. And they're terminated on the spot and they just lost 2 weeks of salary that they could have got if they didn't put in their notice and just quit, you know? And I thought to myself, wow, this seems like a double standard, you know, but yet when the employee doesn't give a notice, the manager is called them disrespectful and ungrateful. And it's like, what world are you living in? I mean, you got to realize that, you know, this is affecting the employees. So I like to stick up for the employees and the managers in these stores because I kind of know what they're going through. And so, yeah, it's definitely hard to pull the trigger, but yeah, the net will be like what, 1600 new stores after Starbucks closes to 400. And then it might even be more, it fluctuates. I mean, that's, you know, it's over 3 years away. So, but, yeah.
Well, that's interesting. And we've surpassed an hour, and I want to be respectful of your time. You know, I'd ask you if you'd be willing to do an hour. That's generally what I feel like is about the digestible window to a lot of people that want to listen to a podcast. You have so much more to share, and obviously you are willing to do that on, you know, the social channels and obviously to folks that are your clients. But I just wanted to, I figured unless you have something else, I wanted to just
Let's continue. Like I said, I want to make sure your audience gets the full value. I think we got a little bit more time. I mean, like I said, I'm okay if you are.
Okay. So, you know, I mean, I guess I feel like the little notes that I had made about the topics I wanted to hit, we've hit, I think, all of that, and you've really added a lot of depth to many of them. You know, I mean, there's no easy button aside from like your acronym, the CAPED, you know,
strategy.
Yeah. So, I just think that what a great concept to be able to plug back in to something like that and start, like you'd said, thinking about, you know, are we operating at a basic level? Okay, what can we do better? Who, you know, identity wise, who are we? And are you doing the things within the CAPE strategy? You know,
I think you were asking me about what retailers can do if they, you were talking to me before the show, or what is one thing retailers can do to have success and one can they don't, they have failure or something like that?
Yeah. So, yeah, is it, you know, and I don't want to try to simplify.
Right? I think I got that right.
Yeah, but I try not to oversimplify. But, you know, at a basic level, is there something they can do, like do A and have success, do B and have failure? You know, what is that as simple as that?
Yeah. If you look at the top tier retailers that consistently experience success, they're always focused on improving their customer and employee experience. I see the thing about consulting with clients and we're on the podcast and doing Zooms and all that is some people are looking for these silver bullets all over the place, you know, like, you know, and there's not going to be, I've never read a book or took an online course and every single topic was, oh my God, I've never heard of that before. Oh my goodness gracious. You know, it's the first ever. It's a lot of times it's about honing in on specific strategies and getting better. And I have an advantage here living in Green Bay and studying Vince Lombardi. He only ran like six plays for the Packers. And the power sweep was the one that everybody knew what it was. Everybody knew it was coming, but they couldn't stop it. That simplifies everything. It's what do you want to be known for? So the top tier retailers, they're fanatical. Again, I'm reiterating again, listening to the customer, employee, leader, and vendor, their feedback. And then here's the key. You got to respond expeditiously. You can't just listen and then 6 months go by and go, well, circle back around. You can't wait 6 months. You know what I'm saying? You have to respond as soon as you can, because what happens is when people bring up issues to you, customers or employees, and nothing happens, their anger, their disappointment, their disgust starts to fester. And the energy keeps raising up. So you got to kind of nip it in the bud, per se. Mm-hmm. But executive leadership generally leads. And this is why I posted about this yesterday, with heart energy. And it trickles down to all the leaders throughout the organization. So you've heard me talk about this before. I'm not really a fisherman, but it's a fisherman acronym or saying, a fish stinks from the head down. And the C-suite teams set the tone regarding culture and empathy and kindness and vision, commitment and inclusion. And so the silver bullet, if you want to say per se, is focusing on providing an immersive, interactive, engaging, and connected experience for all the shareholders and stakeholders. So again, I want to revisit the four E's again. This is something that, you know, I'll reiterate something throughout the call because I want to make sure people remember this. Uh-huh. It's engagement, experience, entertainment, and execution. So I created an axiom for the future of retail because I put it on the back of my book cover as well. It's the future of retail is a healthy balance between innovation, technology, and here's the key, human engagement. Everybody's focusing on innovation. Everybody's focusing on technology. What about the people? What happened to the people? I don't get it. I mean, every successful business is a people-oriented business. Now, don't get me wrong. AI and technology is going to remove some of the monotonous, mundane jobs. I understand that, but people aren't going to go away. That's just going to be a bunch of robots, I would hope. You know. So, and then, of course, on the opposite side, the retailers and business that are experiencing failure have a C-suite team that is not fully committed to providing the four E's of engagement, experience, entertainment, and execution. So success in any endeavor, Brian, and you know this, is all about the people you have working for your company. It's all about the people working for you. It's all about the people you're serving. Again, people say, oh, Jeff, I've heard this before. Take care of the customer. Take care of the employee. If it's so easy, how come you're not doing it? I guess, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like it's everybody thinks that they're doing it so well, but if you look at the places I told you to go look for the forums and the feedback, they're not saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. So there's some disconnect there. And so, you know, the my book, people, I get asked this a lot. They ask me, Jeff, it's a retail book. Why are your first three chapters, talent acquisition, brand recognition, and talent retention? I get asked this all the time. And I said, because these are the three segments that are the most important things you got to master. You got to master these three. Don't get me wrong. They're all important. All 10 pillars are important. But these three, and brand recognition is not a pillar, by the way, but talent acquisition and talent retention are two of the 10 pillars. You've got to be able to hire and retain world-class talent. And no retailer or business will ever be successful long-term if they can't do that. It's just not going to happen. So, and instead of focusing on the latest technology and the latest innovation, which don't get me wrong, they're important. Focus on making sure you're hiring. How's your onboarding process? We didn't even talk about that. I experienced 8 different onboarding processes throughout my retail leadership career. And I'll tell you, 4 of them were really good and 4 more were horrendous. And I mean, pretty bad. And so I put this in the book. How's your onboarding process? How's your succession plan? You know, why would somebody want to stay long-term with you? What are you doing to retain your employees? It seems like a lot of companies, and again, not all of them, but once they got you in-house, that's it. You're just supposed to just be on autopilot and just stay there forever. Well, you know, people are starting to realize that, you know what, their skill sets are valuable. And, you know, so what are you doing to retain them? Now, some companies are doing free education and they're upping the, you know, the wages, and they're giving more time off. They're doing some good things. Don't get me wrong. But it'd be nice to see most companies doing these things. And so talent acquisition and talent retention are the new currency in 2022 and beyond. So I just wanted to end it with that because I really believe that those are the two most important things that are happening right now. Everybody's like, you know, drive sales and we got to make a profit and all that. Well, that all comes from hiring good people, having a great onboarding experience, okay, and then retaining them by making sure they feel included. And that ties, that dovetails into the GAP, which is the Growth, Autonomy, and Purpose acronym that I created. And you break down all these categories, and now you have a blueprint to be successful. So like I was telling you before we got on the show, a lot of this information I charge for. And, I charge my clients for this information. Now, it's more, much more broken down and more detailed, you know, with me being there a lot of times on site and showing, by leading by example, showing them what I mean. But the point is that this is good information, but you just got to apply it. And the key is you got to be consistent with whatever you do. Make sure you're consistent. Again, whatever it is, whatever you want to be successful in, just don't give up. Take your lumps, have your bad days, get up. Dust yourself off and say, you know what, like me, I'm not going to give up, you know, and that's just me. When I focus on something, I'm going to see it through to the end. But so hopefully your audience today got some good value out of this conversation and hopefully they can implement some of the concepts or all of them. And I'd love to hear their success stories.
Well, absolutely, without a doubt. And I know that, I mean, not, you know, there are many who will hear this and be taking notes and be referring back to this. I know that the details that you've covered are, you know, it fits so well, and it comes full circle in this conversation for us to come back around. I appreciate you taking the time and sharing with the Dealership Fix It audience. Would you mind sharing where they can find more about your consulting business, the new Retail Ethos, your book, online courses, and the stuff we chat about today?
Yeah, definitely. For the consulting services, you can go to www.newretailethos.com. For the online courses, I have a special website dedicated to that. It's called www.theultimateretailcourse.com. And then, of course, for the Ultimate Retail Manual, you can find that on Amazon. Just type in the Ultimate Retail Manual, it'll pop up. And I'm pretty excited about getting my 55th five-star review. I was really excited to see that. You know, it's nice to see that people are really resonating with your work, Brian, when you put so much effort and time into something. And, you know, I didn't write the book to get rich. It's not about the money. It's about helping people because I really understand. I would have loved to have a book and online courses and all this stuff. And, you know, it's kind of weird. If I had a time machine, I'd go back and do this in the 90s. I wouldn't have all the same experience, though, unfortunately. So I'd have to bring that with me from the future. But I would have loved to have all this stuff when I was a new leader in the early 90s. There wasn't one book that had all this information. You'd have to buy a bunch of different books, which, again, I don't mind reading a bunch of books. I love to read. You and I both share that passion. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're getting, if you're reading 10 books, you're getting 10 different viewpoints and 10 different perspectives. And my book, I wrote from an empirical results standpoint versus a theoretical ideas. And what I mean by that is I tell you what to do, and then I show you how to do it. I give you the steps, like just what we did on the call today. And I read a lot of books, and they tell you, but they don't show you.
Right.
Well, take care of the customer. Oh, okay, well, how do I do that? You know, just increase sales, and you'll be okay. Well, how do I do that? And when I say how, detail it, break it down, give me ideas, give me experiences of what you've done and what you've experienced. And that, to me, is the best books that... Now, if you're just reading for entertainment, that's one thing. You know, mine's obviously nonfiction. If you're reading fiction, that's a different story. That's about a story to be immersed in and you know, and stuff like right. that. But mine's a hands-on manual. Yep. There's a blank page at the end of every chapter for notes. And the people that are getting success from the online courses. Now, what I did was there's five different online courses total. There's the Ultimate Retail Course, which is the entire course. It's broken up into 10 pillars, just like the book. And it's released on a drip schedule, which means that every week there's two pillars that are released. And you can learn at your own pace. Some people want to do it in 5 weeks. Some people want to take 10. So the good news is it takes about 5 weeks because there's a download of information, a deluge of information that you download, and you need time to process it and time to, you know, implement it where you are. I have a consulting course that you can sign up for, that I can consult with you one-on-one for two 1 hour sessions through Zoom or on the phone or whatever you like. And if you're local, it could be in person. And then there's courses that are broken up for different things. There's an HR course, there's a retail fundamental course. And then there's a bundle that you can purchase, which basically you get the ultimate retail course. You get the ultimate retail manual, and then you get 2 1-hour sessions with me as a coach. So that's the one that's the most popular because it's the fully immersive experience. You're getting the book, you're getting the course, and you're getting the coaching and the mentoring. That's the one I enjoy the most because, you know, and two 1 hour sessions is not enough sometimes, but it's enough to give them, you know, the structure that they need, so they can get going. And then anybody can reach out to me on LinkedIn. Like I said, I try to connect with most people. And, like I said, that's how you and I connected. Mm-hmm. I think Harry Flair mentioned you to me, or me to you, for the show, I think, mm-hmm. way back in 19. Mm-hmm. And like I said, there's a lot of great connections on LinkedIn. I encourage everybody to go on there. And that's where I spend about 90% of my social media time, mm-hmm. is on LinkedIn. So little shout out to LinkedIn right there.
Heck yeah. No, it's definitely the best social media that exists. If you don't want to just be down the rabbit hole on nonsense, you know, it's definitely something that's correct. Actionable. I'll include your website, the different links that I have for you in the show notes. And I hope you'll come on again in the future and we'll talk about this or other fresh topics. And I do really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, absolutely, Brian. Like I said, you know, yours is one of the shows that I really enjoy. You're a great host. You're very engaging. You learn how to talk to people. You know what I'm saying? It's a great show that you have. I'm glad. What episode is this, by the way? I think you ended at 80 something.
Well, it's funny you say that because I actually stopped putting the number in
a handful
of episodes ago. And I was thinking, and I'll tell you why. It's funny. I should know the number. Just between you and I, and everybody is listening. It's funny.
Nobody's listening.
Yeah. And who knows? I mean, I can always go back and just add numbers to the episodes. You just edit.
No, I'm just kind of curious because I know you did quite a few.
Yeah. It's about 80 now. And I tried to not stay hung up on the number, the season, the episode. Although my initial start was, I figure if I do 100, I'll know if I'm either A, any good at it, or B, if I enjoy it. Because I'm not using this as a moneymaker. This is something I just thought should exist. So I thought, well, no one's doing it in the way that I would foresee it, so I'll just do it. And I thought in my mind it was 100, and I'm trying to keep, as I get closer, that number out of my head. So I'll just surpass it one day and say, oh, I beat the number, you know, and how do I feel about all this? But I haven't gotten there yet.
I think it's 100. If not, it is now. It is like losing weight. How much have you lost? I don't know, 50, 60, whatever it takes. That reminds me of you ever seen, what's that movie with Michael Keaton? Mr. Mom.
Oh, absolutely.
When he goes, what are you using? 220? Yeah, 220, 221, whatever it takes.
Total classic.
That's the best.
Absolutely.
That's the best.
Yep.
But yeah, like I said, I think after the last episode we had in 2019, I think Joe Johnson bought a copy of the book, and there was another lady, God, I forget her name, and they reached out to me and really loved the book and said how they were using some of this. So it's nice to see you have a niche that actually, believe it or not, and that's what's great about the book and the online courses is I get asked a lot of times, well, I'm not actually in retail. Is it just a retail course? And when you name, just like you said about the episodes, when you name something, you don't want to name it everything in the world. Like it can't be the best retail course. So it's retail is what I know, but it's a business course as well. It's a business course. It's a human resources course. Mm-hmm. It's a culture, because each pillar is going to be its own course as well. I'm still working on that right now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to break it down into each pillar will be its own course, so people can kind of do an a la carte thing if they want. So that's what I'm working on as well right now. But it's for any retailer, any business owner, entrepreneur, founder, CEO, retail student, college student, high school student, intern. It has a lot of crossover to it. And my book, people said, Jeff, you should have called your book The Ultimate Business manual. But the thing is that, you know, it's retail is my background, and that's where I wanted to kind of stay within that niche, you know, per se. But yeah, so it was nice to see people in the power sports industry that purchased the book and they reach out, and I love to get the feedback. It reaffirms every engagement or comment or review, reaffirms my decision to write the book and then of course create the course. And our courses, I should say, and yeah. It just makes you feel good that people resonate with your work.
Well, yeah, and then obviously your desire to be, as you have been, timely in updating as trends and times change in the space. So much
correct,
much appreciated. We'll end it here, and I hope you have a great day, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks a lot, Brian. You have a good day, okay?
Thanks, Jeff, for you too.
All righty, bye.